All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how are we doing? It's a Monday on The Usual Suspects, and hopefully coming off a great weekend and the Texans draft and the latest two episodes of The Last Dance. You're ready to chat it up with us. Barry's here. I'm here. Dell is here. And we are happy that you are tuned into ESPN 97.5. Fellas, what's going on?
What's up, Playboy? How are you?
I'm good, man. You?
I am doing well. Long time no talk, it feels like, right?
No. Mm-mm. Well, at least hopefully we'll have a better connection than Saturday. But other than that, it doesn't feel like it's been that long.
I just got to start off by saying, one, I appreciate you joining me for my nightly live chats. I had to reschedule Dell, but he was gracious enough to get moved to May 18th, so still doing it. Just had to bump it back
a
little bit.
Wait, Dell scheduled?
Yeah.
I thought he was doing June 34th.
No, May 18th is Dell, and guess what, Joel? Guess what? May 26th, Charlie freaking Polillo.
Boom.
I'm so
That's
pumped,
you.
Dude. I got, dude, the month of May, I've got Granato, Fred Fowler, Dell, and Charlie Polillo all joining me from Gal Media. How freak.
Well, that's fantastic.
You and I had a good one, though. It was really good. It was everything I had hoped it would be, and it was the reason I wanted you to join me. I think that the peeps and the listeners got some insight into us as a show, yep, as people, as a tandem, as a, you know, co-hosts, and all the strife and problems we went through and where we're at and how great it is now. And the feedback was outstanding. And everybody said to a person that they appreciated it. They said they feel more invested in the show now, knowing a lot of the backstory and stuff. And I got to give you credit, Joel, because you talked about stuff that was personal and deep. And a lot of people said that it was great to hear, it was inspirational, and that it was kind of touching and moving. And I think it was great to see that side of you for the peeps. So hats off to you, man. It was outstanding.
It was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, I was kind of disappointed it got cut short, and at least that last story made it in. But, everybody but Sam Rubio liked it, but
well, my sister tried to tell Sam. I was even in the chat going, "Sam, stop being like that, Sam," because Sam's a great dude. But I'm like, Sam, stop being mean to Joel, please. This is going swell.
If you don't like me, that's fine, but just keep my name off your keyboard and out of your mouth, and we're gonna be good. I mean, I'm glad he loves you, but other than that, my sister texted me the next morning and said, "You know, do you realize that I didn't know a lot of that stuff?" Because she was already out of the house and everything when I was growing up.
Oh, wow.
And she goes, "I was so taken back." She goes, "I wanted to call you that night." She goes, I just figured I'd reach out. I didn't know what you were doing with the kids, so I figured I'd reach out right away first thing this morning. But she said, "I had no idea, and I feel like I should have been there for you more." And I was like, look, I turned out fine, and everything was okay. It's just, you know, it's just one of those deals where – you know, everybody goes through stuff at times in their life, and you just, it's how you come out of them that defines you more than the issues themselves. And I had a lot of fun with it, and literally, and I was, and Nick, I guess, went back and listened to it yesterday because he was saying some of the things he liked and everything. I was like, I did not script, plan, or even think about the hammer being on my desk in here, which it's still here. But the fact that we came out of a glitch with the hammer and got people to re-engage was a lot of fun.
So great. It literally, if I go back and do the best highlights of April or something, it's going to be one of the top highlights. Between Billy D showing me his belly, John Wesling putting underwear on his head, and you pulling up a hammer. I mean, three of just the absolute gems, but the hammer might win it all, bro. It was spontaneous. And I was giving you a hard time, but about, I was like, oh, did you plan it? God, and it was so great, man. And it was a lot of fun. I don't want to be gushing and all that, but it was a blast.
No, it really was. I enjoyed it. Like I said, and even Lisa's brother was listening in California, and I think he put it on your chat, but he also texted me, and he was just talking about the fact that the insight that people that are not trying to get into the career, and even if they are, but the insight that people got from listening about the business, mm-hmm. about, you know, sometimes the backstory, it's kind of like people that want to watch The Last Dance. I mean, in different industries, there's a backstory, and whether you're aware of it or not, as we all know, I mean, it's not always what you see and hear and think. And so I think a lot of people were intrigued by kind of the way we got started and what we went through to get to where we are now. So I'm glad that people got a lot out of it.
Yeah, they loved it. And I'm happy we did. And I appreciate you again doing it. Now, my question for you, based off of the draft, was this a success or a failure for Bill O'Brien?
I think it was, you know what? I'm going to say this. I think it was somewhat of a success for Bill O'Brien. I think that picks that he made, some of the guys that he got, I don't think he did too bad. I think that let me state that, and also state this doesn't get him off the hook for all the things he's done wrong. Because boy, there's some people on Twitter. I thought the red Kool-Aid was bad, but there's some people on Twitter drinking that blue Kool-Aid that just think this dude hung the moon. But I don't think it was that bad. I thought he did fairly good. What'd you think of it?
I felt like he blew the first pick. He had the opportunity to get Trevon Diggs. There was somebody out there tweeting about how he realizes that Bill O'Brien was valuing press man coverage in a corner, and that's the thing that they were keying on. And, you know, not that I'm an expert in any of this, but everything I read, everything that the experts said was Trevon Diggs was pretty darn good at press man coverage, pretty darn good at coverage in general. Graded just below Gadney out of TCU, who went in the first round. And I mean, when I say just below, Gadney graded out of at a 6.4, Diggs graded out at a 6.39. So you had an opportunity to get a guy like that with your first pick in the second round, and they didn't. They went a little bit different. They went defensive interior, and I was like,
they went defense. They went defensive line and edge rusher with the first two picks.
Yeah, and I just felt like, you know, I was looking at different places that were grading, and I saw that they got one of the worst grades from Pro Football Focus that was out there. We'll get to who got the worst, but Texans got a C+, and I just felt like the Grenard pick was a little rushed, I guess, because of the debacle with the Lions and the trade that didn't happen.
Right.
I think in the fourth round he did pretty good, actually, although it was a head scratcher that he went and got a tackle and Charlie Heck, unless the plan is to move him inside to guard, which is a smart move if Heck can play guard. But I felt like Trevon Diggs would have been a really good pick at that spot at 40, and he was available, and I was pumped about that. And he didn't do it.
It's interesting because
that was bad.
I'm looking at the different grades from the different outlets, and CBS gave out three A's and a B to four of the five Texans picks. The only one that got a C- was the Charlie Heck pick. Now, I mean, he's got an NFL dad that is coaching in the league. He seems to be a pretty smart player. Bill O'Brien seems to have liked him for a long time since his days at Penn State. So, yeah, I don't know if they're going to move him around or not, but it's always good to get a skilled lineman and then figure out, even if you have to figure out if he's going to switch positions or not.
Well, I think be depth too, which if you get quality depth at tackle,
right,
that could
sure.
be good.
And you got, so, you know, Ross Blacklock is a local kid, Elkins kid, TCU product. Some people thought he was going to be late first, got him in the second, but looks like a good pick. With only, five picks to judge, I think they did better than average. And so and it's always a wait and see with the draft. But
sure.
if it's anything like last year, then I give them credit. You know, you're talking about with a press corner, but John Reed from Penn State is another guy that a lot of people think can play in the league. I don't know, when, But I hear what you're saying. I just think that the whole thing was so Texan-y when on video with his kids sitting right there, he goes complete tantrum mode. And at first, no one knows what's going on. And everyone can pretty much assume whether he did it or someone else did it. Something happened with someone he wanted he's not getting. And he just goes tantrum mode. And it's like, okay, Bill, you're not helping yourself. You need to remember there's a camera on you and they're getting everything that you're doing and you don't look stable.
No, no, he looked bad, and then you find out that he got duped by the Lions in a trade, and you're just like, boy, he can't do wrong right, it feels like. And I will give him credit for one thing for sure, because I just want to point out, it's not that I think that who he drafted is bad. Like, you know, I don't think that Blacklock in the second round where he got him wasn't bad. I just think that the bigger need was corner, because you had picked up that cat from Philadelphia. I'm blanking on his name. And I think you could have still got some interior help later in the draft. And, you know, but I felt like to get a good quality corner for this team was of the utmost importance. And so he just felt differently, and that's fine. I just disagree with that. But I think that he got value. He didn't put it this way. He didn't blow a pick like last year when they reached for Tytus Howard in the first round. I felt like the values, where he drafted people, their value was pretty accurate, if that makes sense. If you looked at grades and everything else, there was no reach for his draft, so that's a good thing. But yeah, getting and I do want to give him props. Trading three of those seven round picks and getting basically a sixth out of all of those, that's good value. He didn't pick in the seventh round, which none of those guys stick anyways. So you managed to move up around. So you managed to gain a little value out of them. So that's a good thing. But I just – it was okay for me. It was mediocre.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, like I said, with anything with the draft, it always is a remains to be seen and see how it all goes. I also was a little disappointed that they weren't more active in getting some of the undrafted free agents. There were some guys out there that they could have possibly, you know, taken a look at or brought in. But for the most part, look, we'll see what happens. There's a lot still to be done. And from an honest perspective, I know we're going to go over grades that other people have given for all the different teams. If the Packers don't get an F across the board or close to it, then I don't know what the hell people were watching, because there were a lot of people
back home. That
was
what I was going to tell you.
Yeah, there were a lot of people back home that wondered if if Brian Gutekunst, the GM's intern assistant, didn't make all the picks somehow by mistake. So it could be a lot worse. And so for Bill O'Brien's first draft as the GM, I'm not going to poo-poo on it until I see how these guys start panning out. But I don't think it was bad. I just don't know how good it was. I'll give it a little above average.
Pro Football Focus gave them a D, which was their lowest grade this year.
Wow, okay.
So that's not great.
Texans, not Packers, right?
Yeah, no. Packers got a D. Texans got a C+.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, Packers, that's a little high. They should probably reevaluate that. All right, coming up next, if anybody was watching The Last Dance last night, there was a whole lot to uncover, unfold, and talk about. And we got a guy that was kind of indirectly in the middle of all of it. Kevin McHale is going to join us next. He'll talk about those bad boy Pistons, the handshakes or not after games, and what the hell is going on with all of this stuff between the Bulls, Jordan, the Pistons, and how soft the league is now compared to where it was then. He's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
G'day, Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back, just getting started on The Suspects. ESPN 97.5 on a Monday in the big city. The other big story besides the NFL draft was obviously the next two episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance with Michael Jordan and the Bulls. And this one was interesting because of the fact that it got into some of that Bulls-Pistons stuff. And before that, Pistons-Celtics. And the handshake versus not handshake. And what should you do and not do? And what's the etiquette then and now and everything else? And one of the guys indirectly in the center of all of it was my man Kevin McHale. So I thought, why not get the coach on? Let's hear what he had to say about all of it and catch up with him. We haven't talked to him for a while. So without further ado, Coach, always good to check in. Hope the family is healthy. I know the wife and I catch up on social media every now and then, but and I'm sure your golf game is above average, but just making sure everybody's healthy and all is good.
Yeah, golf game is above average. Nothing else to do out here in Scottsdale. And so I do get my share of golf in. And then when I'm bored, I practice, which it really seems to help. Amazing how practicing helps. I got to remember that sometimes. But yeah, bored to death. This whole thing has been just. Yeah. If I have to sit in the house anymore, I'm driving myself crazy. But yeah, we're all staying healthy, and it's good. How's everybody in Houston doing?
We're hanging in there. We're doing pretty good. I think everybody good. Safely is healthy, although we're doing radio from the house, which is different. But trying to keep the people entertained while at the same time we keep our sanity and we get to escape from the family for 3 hours a day to do radio. So it's good.
Yeah, no, I did a couple of things for TNT and NBA TV from the house, you know.
Yep.
And you know me and computers. You didn't see my operation trying to get on that thing. I was like, oh, my God. How can this be this difficult? But I got it done. And actually, it's funny because I did one with Isaiah Thomas and Ricky Mahorn, and I think it was the episode you're talking about in '88
yeah.
when they finally beat us. And I stopped and I chatted with Isaiah a little bit. So there's a lot of backstory to that. I mean, and Isaiah is correct. I mean, most teams just walked off. I mean, we had been in the finals four straight times. And I would say maybe 20% of the time, one of the guys you knew on the other team would walk up to you and say, hey, you know, good luck, keep it going, or whatever, you know. And I had played with Isaiah in the Pan Am games in 79 with Bobby Knight. And Isaiah and I were roommates early in that thing. And we roomed over in Italy together. And we went over there to play some prelim games and stuff. But I knew Isaiah really well. I always liked Isaiah. And so when I was walking by, he either said something to me or I said something, I don't know, a long time, but I don't remember. But I stopped and said, man, let me tell you something. You'll find out that losing in the finals hurt just as much as losing in the conference finals. It's not over. You know, they act like they had finally slayed the dragon. And I was like, man, you got LA's in front of you. I mean, that's what it's about. You know, I think we had a lot of pride in the Eastern Conference being a very good conference. I was playing with the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, and I said, man, hey, you know, represent the Eastern Conference, go there and win. And so that was kind of what was said.
Well, but here's the question for you. I was not aware of and did not remember that the year before that you guys walked off the floor, or at least Larry and some of the guys walked off the floor when Adrian Dantley was at the free throw line before that game was over with, and that was referenced. But it also seemed like that was all due to the fact that I don't want to say it's a softer game today, but there's just a lot of love and handshakes and buddy-buddy stuff that just wasn't going on back in the day. It was a lot more heated and hated back then.
Oh, no question. I'm saying, you know, of all the series that we won, and I was lucky enough to play in a lot of series where we won in Boston, I don't remember anybody going out of their way to shake your hand, really, honestly, unless it was a couple guys that you happened to know on that team from somewhere in your past or guys you had played with before. If there wasn't like a personal connection, guys I didn't know never stopped and said good luck, you know, in the next series, ever. And I don't remember that at all. And it was, if you lost, you walked off. If you won, you walked off, kind of. So, it has changed a great deal. And Isaiah is correct in the fact that not a lot of people were doing that back then. But that still doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, I laughed my ass off when I saw Michael say, I still hate him. I was like, man, you guys, I mean, I was on the air with Ricky Mahorn, and we were actually laughing about it. I see Mahorn, and we kind of laughed about it, buddy, because, you know, I mean, you compete really hard and stuff. And I never liked Lambeer, but, you know, I never minded the other guys. I always thought that they were just decent guys, and they were playing how they needed to play. I saw John Sally basically was saying, hey, this is how we played. It was rough. It was much more contact. they knew that Michael was better than anybody they had. And, you know, in order to try to get him off his game, they needed their big guys. They had a ton of them, you know, with Rodman and Sally and Mahorn and Lambeer and all these guys they had there, just to waste fouls on him when he got to the line or put him to the line. Don't give him anything easy. So, yeah, you know what? It's interesting how both those guys look at it. Now, look, you know what? Isaiah walking off, at the time, I didn't think that was anything that was, you know, bad. I remember thinking, well, they lost and they're leaving. And, you know, and the Bulls won and they get to move on. So it's interesting now, all those years later, to me, though, that there's still so much animosity kind of between Mike and Isaiah that really goes to show what those series meant.
Kevin McHale joins us on The Usual Suspects. Coach, was you know, we saw where the Pistons had the Jordan rule, and you guys were known as a pretty tough, scrappy team, too. You weren't afraid to mix it up, go hard in the paint. Did you guys have your own version of a Jordan rule?
No, I tell you what, we should have, though, because we played him, I think it was 86, and I think he had 45 in the first. When I tell you this, people laugh when I tell you this. Okay, and I think it was 86. You know, those years do start blending together, believe it or not.
yeah.
But in 86, we won 67 games. I think the Bulls won 35 games. We're playing the Bulls in the first round. We literally go to practice and just work on our stuff. We don't have any double teaming. Michael, this is what we're doing. He gets the ball. This situation, which we normally did. But we honestly looked at that team, and I kid you not, it's like, you know, we can beat these guys if we just show up, like, with one shoe on. You know what I mean? I there was no threat that Chicago could beat us. Now we go into the series, and it's the first game's a tight game. Michael has 45 in the first game, okay? And we're like, damn, this guy's really good, you know? And, you know, so but you know, the next day we come to practice and say, okay, guys, what do we do offensively? We've got to do better, you know, blah, blah, blah. Really, no rules for Michael. And so we play him in the second game. That's the overtime game. He goes for what, 63? I think it was.
Some 63 at your place, yes.
Yeah, some ridiculous number. Yeah, in game two. And, you know, after that game, I went over to Casey Joseph. Case, we might want to start game planning this young fella. I said, you know, we're having a few issues with him. And, you know, so we go into game three, true story. We fly in Friday night. It's a Saturday afternoon game. As I was leaving, they asked me, you know, are you packing for two games? Because the Bulls, you know, had given us two good games in the Boston Garden. And that was the best of three. So I said, no, I'm taking a shaving kit. They said, what? I said, I'm taking the shaving kit. I'm going to crawl in my bed. I'm going to go to the game in my games and my clothes I wore Friday night on the plane to go to Chicago. Then Saturday afternoon, after we beat their ass, I'm going to go on the plane and I'm just taking a shaving kit. So I took a shaving kit to Chicago. And they literally were all upset. And they were like, you know, they go, what's going to happen if you lose? I said, well, I'll smell bad, I guess, if we lose. And then we beat their ass like you read about. We held Michael to 19. We double-teamed every time he touched it. You know, then we were like, well, we can't bump you around with this kid anymore. And he had 19, you know. But, yeah, without preparing for him, that guy went crazy. We were running bodies at him. And the crazy thing about those games, even the first game where he had 45, you know, we were okay. Like in the second game, we made some dumb plays, let it go to overtime. But even in that second game, we had 63. We probably should have won by 5, 6, 7. You know, and we were very good at winning games at 5, 6, 7, 8 points. But you know, he was spectacular. So, yeah, that's, you know, that was the Michael Jordan when we all kind of went, holy smokes, man, this guy is really, really good. But yeah, I brought a shaving kit. The Chicago press didn't like that. I was laughing at him. That was fun.
Danny Ainge is your boy. He's still your boy to this day. Back then, I didn't think golfing with the enemy was – I thought that was frowned upon. The fact that they golfed the day before.
Yeah.
And especially Danny, who your friend, but a lot of guys hated him like they hated some of these guys in this documentary that we've been talking about. But you guys didn't have a problem with the fact that he's golfing with MJ?
Yeah, you know what? He really didn't bother telling us, which is probably a decent thing. And you know what? Danny was going to compete. Like never. It was never a thought that he's golfing with Michael. He's going to go easy on him. Danny, you'd play Danny. Danny's one of my best friends. I would play him after practice in a game of one-on-one. He would hit me below the belt on a jump shot on my game point. I kid you not. Right in my private. And I would be like, you little bastard, I'm going to kill you if you ever do that again. And so, no, did I think that Danny was going to take it easy on Michael? No. He was hitting me in my privates on game point. And so I'm like, you know, I never, ever was. And the two guys that literally, I think Danny and he might have played 36 holes too. Of the two guys in the NBA that had enough energy to play 36 holes of golf on a Thursday and then play basketball Friday night, it would have been MJ and Danny. Those guys are both like crazy, had crazy energy. Like, you know, Michael could play 36 and then go that day of a game and go play. And so I did not. I'm not really, you know, I mean, I think he told me about it. And I was like, I hope you beat his ass in golf, because that guy's beating our ass on the basketball floor. And Danny, and by the way, just for the record, Danny's a better golfer than MJ. So no doubt. I played with them both, and Daniel's a better golfer than MJ. But that didn't bother me much. You know, one thing I wanted to say to you guys, since we're in Houston, I just loved my time there. I had a great time. I thought never got really that, or hasn't at this point got enough play. It's, you know, Michael takes the 2 years off, and of course that's Olajuwon. 2 years they went back-to-back championships. How much trouble Olajuwon and that team would have given Michael? They would have, because I always said what they didn't run into in MJ's kind of, you know, reign there was an unbelievably dominant big man like Olajuwon. And by the way, I'll tell you, of all the things that happened to me in a positive note in Houston, where there was a ton of them, getting to know Hakeem Olajuwon and spending time with him was, I mean, that guy is honestly one of the nicest. I can't say enough good stuff about him. He's a wonderful person. Oh, anyways, I was just saying, if anybody was going to give the Bulls a lot of trouble, it would have been a dominant center, which of course Hakeem was, a freakish athlete that was like just unique, like Michael was to the Bulls. That's what Hakeem was, you know, with Houston. And Houston had three or four guys that didn't care if they were guarding Michael Jordan or not. You know what I mean? You know, you have to have those guys that just don't care. Like Vernon Maxwell, they had enough guys that were just rough riders that they just wouldn't care. You know what I mean? And you have to have that. So I always go like, you know, everybody goes, oh, if they'd have stayed together, they would have won 8 in a row and stuff like that. Well, no one's won 8 in a row since Bill Russell did it with the Celtics. I didn't see it happening either. I think that, you know, the Rockets don't get enough credit. They credit almost as like, well, Michael took 2 years off. Nah. That was really a tough-ass team with some really good defenders that weren't afraid to compete, and with a freakish Hall of Fame center that was really in his prime. So that would have been interesting had MJ not
retired.
You know, left. Yeah, retired. I don't even know what you call it. Left. It would have been very interesting, and I didn't think that got enough play.
On the flip side, let me ask you this real quick, Barry. Let me get to this before you get into anything else. You. Also, we're talking about friends, and first of all, I thought you were going to say your time in Houston and what meant the most to you was our friendship, but I'll let Elijah one take a little
other than that.
Yeah, other than that. I mean, because we've golfed plenty, too.
Yes, we did.
Here's my question for you. Red, you were close with Red Auerbach.
Yeah.
Okay, and in this documentary, they get deep on Phil Jackson, but the thing that I've always had an issue with Phil Jackson, and it seemed like Red was pretty chapped about this, was Phil always walked into the exact right situation. He walked into Michael and Scotty. Later, he walked into Kobe and Shaq, and then he beat Red's records. And Red's whole point of contention was, I built everything myself. Yep. I did everything here. And it seemed like that caused a lot of animosity with Red towards Phil before he passed away.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, look, Phil. Let me say, Phil's different. I don't know Phil well, and that's by design. From what I know of Phil, I don't know him well, and that's because I made it a point not to know him well. And so I don't know, I really don't know anything about him. I don't particularly care that I don't know him. And, you know, I thought it was interesting, because you got to remember what Red did. Okay, Red had the Bill Russell, Bob Cousy, and then all of a sudden, you know, with the Jones boys, and he gets that crew, then later on you had Havlicek to Bill Russell, and you know, Cousy retires and they win. And then all of a sudden you have the Dave Collins, 74-76, JoJo White, Charlie Scott, Don Nelson. You got that crew that wins two championships. Red retools again. Now, of course, you got to remember 69, Celtic Flash Championship. Retooled 74, wins again. And you got to remember, during those times, too, they just didn't win two championships. They were in the Eastern Conference Finals, like, you know, four or five out of 7 years, I think. You know what I mean? So they make a run that's really impressive, that's hard to do. Then he turns around and in 79 drafts Larry, and in 80 drafts Robert Nye, or I guess Robert Nye, and then draft a deal. And all of a sudden they build it up again, and you win three. You end up eight out of nine years ago at the Eastern Conference Finals. So you have an unbelievable run led by Red. And you know what? I think Red looked at it and said, you know, I mean, I think there was a little bit of, well, you know, hell, if I had kind of been able to cherry pick my teams that I went to. But Red did it there, and that's what I always said. It was interesting because, you know, who kind of looked like a bit of a villain who's not a bad guy, wasn't a bad guy, excuse me, he's passed away since then, is Jerry Krause, you know? And I look at Jerry and say, Jerry, would you stop with the organization's win championships? I said, Red Auerbach, he told me, you know, 1980, players win in this league. It's my job to get the players together. I said, you've won three championships now, and you're acting like, you know, you're reinventing the wheel. Reds won 16. Easy, go with the Red theory that players win championships. And I wish he would have done that, because Jerry was not a bad guy. He really wasn't a bad guy. He was pretty easy to deal with as a GM when I dealt with him and stuff. And, you know, he did put together a heck of a team. I just think there was too much of that, you know, everybody kind of ripped him because Michael wasn't his pick. But he put a lot of stuff together, and I almost felt bad when I saw how he was kind of portrayed. I was like, ugh. You know, Jerry's not that bad of a guy. I mean, he really wasn't. I actually enjoyed him, and it was, when you watch something, you kind of go, ooh, that is not the best portrayal, especially for a guy who's passed away, who can't have any, has no say in it. You know what I mean? That kind of sat with me a little bit, like, ooh, man, this guy's become the foil for everybody. You know, and. That was, you know, I kind of saw that one, but I don't know. But anyway, that's kind of my remembrance of the era, and I wanted to get back to what I said. I said I didn't think Houston got enough credit for being a back-to-back great team.
Hey, Coach, a lot of times we talk about the greatest of all time, you know, and the conversation usually begins with Jordan now because of, you know, and mm-hmm. rightfully so. And you hear Magic, you hear Bill Russell, you hear – one name that doesn't get mentioned a lot, and Joel and I were talking about this last week, but maybe should get more mention, is Larry Bird. Do you feel like he's unjustly left out of the greatest of all time discussions?
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, and now everything is a, you know, a right now society and stuff like that. And I was watching somewhere where, you know, one of the morning ESPN shows were saying, it might have been my boy screaming Ace. Or you know, one of those guys yelling about how Michael, you know, built this league. No, Michael didn't build this league. I was in the league before it was built. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird built this league along with David Stern. David Stern had an unbelievable vision for this league. Hey, when I got in the league, like the average salary was like $60,000-$70,000 in 1980. I mean, you weren't making that. I was a rookie, you know, the third pick in the draft. I was making money, but there was like four or five guys on each team making minimum. And look, the games were tape delayed. Everything was different. But I've done this before, but I'm just going to just tell you what started the league. In 79, Larry Bird plays Magic Johnson, Indiana State, Michigan State, and was still one of the most watched NCAA finals ever, 79. Okay, here we go. 80, Magic wins it. 81, Bird wins it. 82, Magic wins it. 84, Bird wins it. 85, Magic wins it. 86, Bird wins it. 87, Magic wins. 88, Magic wins. That's a decade of those two guys being in the prime of their careers and unbelievably pushing this league along with David Stern to heights that you haven't seen. So this league did not start with Michael Jordan and stuff like that. Let's get that straight right away. The two names that always come up that bothers me that doesn't get more credit when they start talking about the best of all time, Larry and Kareem.
How can you Kareem for sure.
Yeah, how can you leave those guys out of it? I'm just telling you, Larry was an unbelievable competitor, tough as nails, great vision, ability to rebound, and people forget that Larry was 6'9", 240, and strong as an ox. And so and Danny and I were talking about this the other day. Ainge, we mentioned him, you know, feisty little guy playing golf with Jordan. Anyways, yep. He was like saying, you know, the one thing that we had with you know, you and Larry was there was always such a mismatch on somebody because they did not have two quality forwards that were really good defenders. And so he goes, you know, one of you two always had a lesser defender on you, and Larry would defer. That's what I always tell people. You know, you look at Magic. Magic would defer. He deferred sometimes to Worthies. He deferred to Kareem. He deferred to a lot of people that could score the ball. Larry deferred to Robert when he got it going, to myself. And those guys just played the game. And I think sometimes now we get caught up, and you guys are caught up in a little bit in Houston. It's all numbers.
And yep.
Let me tell you something. Numbers do not win. Well, one number wins the game. You have one more point than the other team. That's the biggest number. But numbers don't win game, man. Teamwork, playing together, who's the hot man, reading situations, understanding stuff, shot selection, end of the game getting the line, end of the game having plays that you got that aren't three, I mean, that are driving, getting fouled, all those things come in. And look at Kawhi Leonard won the championship for Toronto last year. 15, 18 footers, getting fouled, getting posting up. You know, he just didn't shoot threes. And so, you know, I think sometimes guys look at this thing and go like, you know, oh, those guys couldn't play in today's game. Oh, my gosh. Larry would be such a better Doncic. And I love Luka Doncic. Don't get me wrong. That kid can flat out play. Larry was just a better basketball player. Bigger, stronger, better. So what would he be doing? You know, in today, Magic in today's game would be a guy setting screens for shooters, throwing back to him, then playing downhill like Draymond Green. Imagine no one on Magic throwing back to him, letting him play downhill to the paint. I mean,
Coach, here's the thing, too. And I was thinking about this during the East was like the West is today. The East was loaded back then because of all the conversations we've had. We have eliminated talking about Philly when they had Doc and Moses. A Milwaukee that I was a part of that had series against you guys where maybe they were a player short and they were in a small market, but they gave you guys hell because they had Moncrief, they had Cummings, and they had good players, Marcus Johnson back in the day.
Yeah.
But the East was a pretty solid conference.
Oh, don't forget Brian Winters, Bob Lanier playing center.
Your boy Quinn Buck?
Junior Bridgman. I mean, those guys, man, they had a hell of a team. Beating them was really a chore. And Philly or the Celtics, they had to beat them every year. And I tell you, the Bucks were good. They just, like you said it, they were probably that one player short, you know. And but, man, the Bucks reminded me a lot of kind of Utah Jazz. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just really, really good. And but they just kind of, you know, the Utah had just ran into just teams that were just a little bit better. It had nothing. They played hard. They played smart. They didn't beat themselves. They were disciplined. I mean, everything you can say positive about a team, you say that about the Milwaukee Bucks in that early '80s run. And so,
Now, Coach, do you feel like because you said you were roommates with Isaiah? You also said there's backstory on that handshake because it didn't look all happy-go-lucky, but it did look like at least you guys shook hands. But do you feel like what they did to the Bulls? Because I've heard it from a lot of people in different circles, and you know we know some of the same people, but that Isaiah was basically blacklisted from the Dream Team and going forward was really, really frowned upon by a lot of players after that.
Yeah, you know, I think he was definitely blacklisted on the Dream Team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And also, you know, by the time the Dream Team came around, you know, Zeke was getting a little bit beat up, and so I'm sure they could justify not it, but from just a body of work and what he had done through that time through the '80s, I thought he should have been on that team. But you know, as far as being kind of frowned upon, I think the Pistons did that to themselves. They didn't care if you shook their hand. Honestly, I with Isaiah and I, we were roommates in the Pan Am Games in '79. I've known him forever. He was the one guy I kind of knew from the Pistons, and I always liked his feistiness. I mean, he was a feisty little guy, and he'd cheap shot you and stuff like that, but it never bothered me. And so when I was walking off, I just stopped and just told him, man. You know, he said something to me, and I just said, hey, look, it's not over with yet, man. You got the Lakers ahead of y'all. And if you think losing in the conference finals hurts, wait till you lose in the NBA finals. That's worse. And then I walked off. But let me tell you something. Isaiah didn't care if you liked him. Like, he would walk off. I think he'd walk off today, even with all the lovey, huggy, kissy stuff. I mean, he just, I, you know what? I think the blacklisting probably hurt him, which I do believe that probably did happen. I wasn't involved in it. I'm just speculating. But the other stuff, honestly, Joel, I don't think he could care less. I really, if you like, if you ask Isaiah right now, do you care if someone doesn't like you? If, you know, name a guy, Karl Malone doesn't like you, he'd say, I don't care. You know, he just, and so that was way.
So you liked Isaiah, but let's be honest, your whole team and almost every team in the league hated Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah, I did too. And we all did. He's a very easy guy to hate, yeah. And
was he a jerk off the court too, Coach? I mean, was he just
an
all-around awful person?
Yes, I think so. I don't like him. I don't know. I haven't gone out of my way to know him. I mentioned someone earlier that I didn't go out of my way to know, and I don't feel bad about it at all. I'm glad I don't know him. And there were people in my life. I had lots of friends, and there were just people in my life where I'm like, nah, I don't need that person for my friend. And I'm just moving on, baby. And
I mean, he came out and said, even to this day, he doesn't regret not shaking hands. He didn't care if people didn't like him because he said if he lost sleep over that, he'd be an insomnia. He'd never sleep again. He's just a different – you talk about different kind of guys. He was just another one of those different kind of guys that didn't give a rat's ass if people liked him or not.
Agreed. I mean, I agree. And you know what? I tell you what. You know, Larry's the same. I mean, Larry was the same type cutthroat competitor. Liberty didn't care if you liked him or not. And Larry's really a good guy because I know him and he's a friend of mine. But I said, if you don't know Larry, you might have the most different opinion of that guy than who he really is. But he doesn't care. There was a ton of guys that did not care about what anybody thought of them. They played basketball the way they thought it needed to be played. And it was a simple thing of us versus them. And I'm telling you what. Honestly, if you're going to win a championship, you have to have a bunch of guys that once that game starts, no one remembers how much money they made. No one remembers anything. They remember us versus them. And if you're not us, you're them. Simple as that. And if you're them, we don't like you. And that's what referees used to look at me and say, why are you on my ass? I say, because you're not wearing green. If you were wearing green, I'd look you on your ass. But you got some sort of crazy-ass stripe thing on, and you're not on my team. I got nothing to do. So it was us versus them. And I think that is the primal thing that sports get down to. And I do think the championship teams forget all the other crap. You know, how many shots do I have? Who cares? Are we up or down at the end of this game? That's all.
Coach,
that
leave Dwight Howard out of this. I just have one question before we wrap.
Ouch. With
what we're dealing with this coronavirus, with all the questions surrounding sports, I just got to ask you.
He's
not going to let you live that
Coach,
now, Joel.
Coach, when you got to explain to someone that your touches count when you turn the ball over before you shoot it, I know there are issues with shots. Let's just be real, right? So let me ask you this. Just bring it back to current day real quick. Where are we going with the NBA? They only had about 18 games left in the regular season.
Yeah.
Are they going to get it done? I mean, is it whether there's fans involved or not, are they going to get it done? And are you on board with any of these solutions they have? Or is it just going to be a lost season?
I honestly think they have to get it done. I just think ESPN, ABC, and the TNT network have lost. I mean, they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars just with no playoffs. And I think they'll have to do. I really do. And I talked to Danny, like I said the other day, Age, who was GM of the Celtics. And like he's like, all those top teams, they want a shot at this. Because I think they look at it and think, you want to know something? Man, this is about as open as we've seen it in a while. You know what I mean? Golden State, not in it with when they had that when they had the thing going with them. The Lakers, LeBron and Anthony Davis, unbelievable. But, you know, look at some other people got to make shots and make some plays for them in a playoff situation. You're taking the ball out of those guys' hands. And so I know the top teams, and I do think they will. I just hope they don't do the BS, let's play 2 out of 3. Because one thing that happens in a best out of 7, the best team wins 95% of the time, best out of seven. You know, because you can have a game or two where you shoot like crap or you do something like that, but to win four games out of seven, the best team normally wins. There's occasionally you can look at it where it doesn't. And I'm talking disregarding injuries where something catastrophic happens in the middle of a series. You know what I mean? But so I just think the top teams really want a shot at this. There's millions of dollars. Do you imagine? Okay, like the ratings for this, you know, the Last Dance with the Bulls, okay, are out of the roof. Do you imagine what a game, a live game? I don't care if there's fans or not. Wouldn't the ratings would be for that first live game that you see? No, seriously.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, if I was the golf, if I was PGA, I would say we're putting something on. I don't care if there's not a person within 100 miles of the golf course. I'm putting on live competition. I'd sit my ass in front of the TV. I'm dying to watch. I'm watching games. I know who wins, and I'm watching them. What's wrong with me? You know, there's no competition on television, and it's driving me nuts not having sports like that. So, yes, I think they will. And, Joel, as always, money talks, you know, and BS walks. There's hundreds of millions of dollars at stake. And, you know, and I'll just tell you, the league took a hit. Not because Daryl, you know, just with the Hong Kong thing. And Daryl did not do that. I've said this before. Daryl did not do that maliciously. You know, that whole
Hong
Kong thing. He said what he felt. He might troll people, but that's normally when he says, you know, James Harden's a better scorer than Michael Jordan. And then, you know, that's what he likes to do. Yeah, but as far as something like that, he doesn't do that. So, but that being said, the league lost a ton of dough on that. On
sure
that
they did.
Thing. You know, and now all of a sudden, add another couple hundred million dollars being lost revenue with no TV. And does ABC, ESPN say we want our money back, but we're not paying you because there was no playoff? Does Turner TNT say we're not paying? You know what I mean? All of a sudden, now you're looking at a $2.4 billion business losing damn near $1 billion. You think about that. So you know what? I think they'll do it. Here's my biggest fear is that this thing starts running into, they can't get it going, they still want to have 10 games, and all of a sudden you're playing in August and September.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and then you jeopardize the following year.
Couldn't agree more. And you know, so I do think there will be, Joel. I just think there's too much money not to. And I, again, like I said, think about the ratings. Think about how many people would – I mean, I would drop anything right now to watch a live basketball game tonight. I'd buy a case of beer, and then I would sit there and see if I could drink the whole damn case and watch the game. Now, I wouldn't be able to drink the whole case, but that's how frustrated I am. I'd try, and I would fail. But I would watch it and probably remember the fourth quarter. But I would be excited to watch it. So, I mean,
well, stay tuned because ESPN's going to broadcast Korean League baseball games possibly soon. You'll have something to watch, and you can still drink the beer.
I don't think I can drink beer and watch Korean League baseball.
Coach, there was a fight, and the first time they broadcast it, no one in the stands and the team still fought. So it might be worth
it. Maybe I will watch it. I like it.
Well, we appreciate you, Coach. I miss catching up with you and talking on the regular basis, but I will give you a shout because we love having you on the show, and we appreciate you taking some time being bored to talk to us because the people here love you and miss you.
All right, you guys. Hey, always great talking to you, Houstonians. I had a great time there, and I love Texas. Take care, guys.
Appreciate you, Coach.
There you go. Kevin McHale. One of the true good guys, no matter what. And we appreciate him here on The Suspects. We're way overdue for a break, but you guys love that. We'll get caught up on that by starting to get a break here. Back with more. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
She likes it real slow. Then we speed it up.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com. Or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.